This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Some residents of East Palestine, Ohio, have reported headaches, rashes, and a lingering chemical odor after the February 3rd derailment of train cars, carrying some of them hazardous chemicals, and the fires that followed. The Environmental Protection Agency says that the air in the community and the municipal water supply are safe. Chemicals spilled in nearby waterways, killing thousands of fish, and a few communities that get their water supply from the Ohio River temporarily switched to alternate sources. Between 2015 and 2022, the Federal Railroad Administration investigated 110 train derailments with a hazardous material spill. The Association of American Railroads says more than 99.9% of all hazardous material moved by trains arrives at its destination safely. Alan Zaremski is a professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering and director of the Railroad Engineering and Safety Program at the University of Delaware. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm glad that. Thank you for having me.
Before we look at wider concerns about the state of rail safety, let's dig into this derailment from what we've seen so far, and I assume an investigation will be ongoing, but what do we know about what might have caused this derailment?
Well, as you say, the investigation is ongoing, and the National Transportation Safety Board has been on the scene actively starting their investigation. But there is some information that they've released, and there's some information that gives us an indication of what the cause is. It looks like this was a derailment caused by a overheated railroad wheel bearing that actually burned through the axle and caused the axle to break or fracture under the train, causing a derailment.
How rare is an incident like this?
First of all derailments are rare. Mm-hmm. Derailments are rare almost by definition. But these are unusual derailments. I think we get about maybe 10 or 15 of these a year across the entire United States, across 500 million train miles of train activity in the U.S., which makes it a very, very low probability of event. And of those, only a very tiny fraction of those actually involve hazardous materials.
That said, for people in East Palestine, one is clearly too many. What kind of safeguards are there to try to prevent even this rare incident from happening and then resulting in a spill like this?
Okay. Railroads try to do multiple things to prevent derailments. In the case of a hazardous material spill or a hazardous material event, there are two distinct mechanisms involved. First, it's the derailment, and then there's the breach of the tank car after the derailment. So let's start with the derailment. Railroads spend a lot of time, money, resources on inspection and technology and other technologies to try to prevent derailments. For example, this particular derailment, which is an overheated bearing detector, railroads have special detectors, infrared detectors, mounted in the track every 25 miles or so, where they actually measure the temperature of the bearings to see if they're getting too hot. And if they do find that their bearing is hot, the system is automated. It sends an immediate message to the crew, basically saying, stop the train and go out and check. So this type of technology exists throughout the United States, actually exists throughout the world. And that's part of the sophisticated tools used to inspect trains and track and to prevent a derailment. On those rare occasions when a derailment does happen, there's a second layer of protection, so to speak, which is the specialized tank cars used in the carrying of hazardous materials. These tank cars have all sorts of protective features to it. They're usually double walled with a thermal insulating barrier in between to keep fire or heat from penetrating into the interior of the tank car. They have head shields, which are big plates at the end of the tank car to prevent any punctures. There's specialized protection for the different release valves that are used to load and unload the tank cars. So as a result, even when there is a derailment, which is rare to start with, a breach in the tank car is even rarer. So I agree with you. It's no consolation to the people in Ohio that they happen to have the one event that happened like this. But these events are extremely rare, and usually you get events like this in you know, one in multiple years, and you know that's the type of frequency you see something like this.
Now, in the case where the rare derailment has happened, that rare puncture of a hazardous material carrying tank car, I wonder about, you know, how do rail lines communicate with local fire departments? If I'm a fire department, I know, okay, this factory over here produces this and uses these chemicals, or this agricultural facility uses these things, and so on. Do they know, are they ready for what might be shipped through their jurisdictions on a train?
Yes, and there are a couple of things the railroads do to help first responders. The first thing is the crew carries a complete list of everything in the train, so they know what's in every car. Number two, there is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week chemical spill hotline that's maintained, so that in the event of a catastrophic event, and it's not just railroads, it can be the highways as well, there is a emergency phone number that any first responder can call. And the crew, by the way, also has these phone numbers, and that would give them specific guidance as to the properties of the chemical, special measures they may have to take in fighting the fire or preventing a release, and that type of information. In addition to that, the railroads sponsor a significant amount of training for first responders. There is a transportation test center in Pueblo, Colorado, that runs very realistic hazmat and fire prevention training for first responders, and they go, and thousands of first responders go through that training each year. In addition to that, railroads invariably reach out to first responders, particularly on routes where there is movement, where there's a significant movement of hazardous materials. And they likewise reach out to the first responders and provide instruction. In fact, I understand now that there's also an app that they've made available as well. So not only do you know, can use their phone line, there's a real-time app that can be used for finding out what the properties of the different chemicals involved are.
We're talking about railroad safety with Alan Zaremski, Director of the Railroad Engineering and Safety Program and Professor at the University of Delaware. Want to give a listen to the Senate delegation from Ohio, starting with Democrat Sherrod Brown talking to CNN, raising questions, he said, about corporate greed.
That's why I'm angry when I look at these companies lay people off. They never look out for their workers. They never look out for their communities. They look out for stock buybacks and dividends. Something's wrong with the corporate America, and something's wrong with Congress.
And Alan, we had these negotiations over railroad staffing during the near-miss strike, some back and forth between presidential administrations, over how much staffing should be on trains. Is staffing a problem?
Let's take the Ohio the derailment as an example. There is no evidence whatsoever to indicate that staffing or lack of manpower contributed in any way, shape, or form to this derailment. The information that I've seen, and by the way, I've seen nothing other than publicly available information, so I don't have access to anything special. But the information I've seen suggests that both the hot bearing detectors in the vicinity of the derailment were all working. The crew was, was alert, active. When they became aware of the incident, and unfortunately, they didn't become aware of the incident until the actual derailment happened. It sounded like they took all the proper actions. Again, I'm just going by what I saw in the media, but for what I've seen, it looks like the crew, you know, behaved quite well, and I don't really see any manpower effect in this accident. Now, if you look in general in safety accidents, the railroad, we're not seeing any major uptick in safety incidences. derailment instances. The data seems to suggest that that railroads are taking their safety seriously, and there's no, from what I can understand, there's no let up on the part of the Federal Railway Administration in terms of their safety oversight of the railroads, because in addition to the railroads themselves, railroads are overseen by the U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Railway Administration Office of Safety, which has specific and very legal capabilities in terms of overseeing railroads and looking for potential problems relating to safety.
Let's bring on a caller. Mark is with us in Two Rivers. Mark, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. You had mentioned, I think, what, 99.99% of the products that are shipped by railroads make it to their destination safely. And that may be true, but I care more about the 0.01% that don't. And then your guest talked about hot bearing detectors. Well, if the hot bearing detectors were working, they certainly didn't do their job because they didn't warn the train operators in time. And finally, I grew up in East Central Illinois, and there was an event that occurred due to a hot bearing and a train derailment. There were bloody explosions and almost wiped that town off the map. And I grew up in the town that was the next stop along the way, 7 miles away, and it would have been my hometown. So I have sort of a vested interest in this as well.
Mark, thanks for the call. That number was, I think, just a sort of a vague number for the Association of American Railroads. But Mark's point, one, it doesn't seem like the ball bearing detector worked. And even if it's a rare event, the damage can be pretty severe. What do you say to Mark, Alan?
Okay, so let's start the first one first. All the indications were the overheating bearing detectors were working. The problem with overheated bearings is that they can heat up very, 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 very quickly when the bearing seeds. So there's actually a lot of work being done in the research area in looking at additional supplemental technology to try to even improve upon the existing overheated bearing technologies. But the problem we're dealing with is, and this is the second issue, there's always a level of risk. Unfortunately, when I've been working in this industry 50 years, and there are a lot of, and the same is true of all modes of transportation. Nobody's going to claim to eliminate risk, but what we want to do, what we strive to do, is reduce risk. So if we're 99.99% catching it, we want to make it 99.9999% catching it. And then we want to go to 99.99999% catching it. That's what you do. And you do that by improving the technology, by improving the facilities, by improving the levels of maintenance. But remember, this is not an event that happens very often. And so you have to be able to mobilize your resources to try to prevent that. And at the moment, there's no technology that will guarantee no failures at all, be it railroads or airplanes or trucks or automobiles. Those technology at the moment doesn't exist in any mode of transportation. But the railroad industry is very serious about safety, is very serious about trying to reduce the occurrences. And I very much appreciate the fact that in Ohio at the moment, they're the one that happened.
Alan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Okay.
That's Alan Zaremski, professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering, director of the Railroad Engineering and Safety Program at the University of Delaware, looking at what we know in the aftermath of the train derailment in Ohio.